Hi, everybody. It's so nice to be here. Thank you. My name is Leah, and I'm an alcoholic. Thanks so much for having me, you guys. I was just saying before this started that I actually haven't been to a speaker meeting on Zoom, and here I am being the speaker at a speaker meeting on Zoom, but that tends to be the way that I do things often, more often than I'd like, you know, diving into shit that I have no idea how to do. But I have this handy outline that Chris gave me around how to manage my time here with you guys. So I'm going to try and stick to some of that. So please bear with me, though. And hey, Chris, wave at me if I'm, you know, rolling on or whatever you need me to do. So I was born in a town called Duncanville, Texas, which is just about 30 minutes south of Dallas. And it's in what I'd call probably the buckle of the Bible Belt, or that's how my family was. It was actually a really diverse community. There were, you know, I went to a really integrated high school, and I had what I think of it felt like a normal and fairly happy childhood. I, looking back, and what I know now was some of the religious stuff that was around me, and my family was Southern Baptist, did not fit with me at all, and eventually would lead me to turn my back on God entirely. And we all know that's not helpful when you're looking for recovery. So there's a little bit of foreshadowing. I had a little bit of an unusual high school experience because I traveled a lot. I was like a kid model and actress. And so I went to LA in the summer times, and surprisingly, I actually had no exposure to anything nefarious. There was really not even alcohol. I mean, it was around, but I wasn't really affected. It didn't really affect me. And I didn't drink. I didn't even take my first drink until I was about 17 years old. I stopped doing all of that. I went to UT. I would say I was just a normal drinker, you know, like kids do in college. And honestly, through up until my mid-30s, what I did, though, was I married a guy that was somebody I knew from high school and had met up again with in college. And I knew I didn't love him. I knew I was not in love with him. But I started getting married to him, and I got pregnant right away. And so then I had this baby, and I was newly married to a guy I didn't really love. That's another thing that I know now really affected a lot of what I had to fight when I was moving into recovery. So I had, you know, my oldest son at 24. I had my next son when I was 27. And I had what should have been a very happy life. We had means. My ex-husband came from a family that had money. We had, you know, I had a kind of side business, and I was able to stay home with my kids, and I was still drinking normally. I would say that I was drinking a lot because my peer group drank a lot. And I think that, you know, now I hear there's terms around it, you know, the mommy juice and, you know, pink liquor and all that stuff. And I would certainly say that I was part of that. But it was, again, drinking along with my peer group until when I was 34, the stock market crashed and my ex-husband lost a whole lot of money, and he got really depressed. And, so I kind of went down with him, and we moved up to Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And that's when I really started to drink. And that's when I started to drink alone. And that's when I, that's when he started actually making comments around my drinking. And that didn't really feel like it fit because he was such an asshole, and, you know, he was always trying to control me and all of these things. And so, you know, I was really easily able to shrug him off and keep going. But, you know, there was definitely an isolation and a sadness that had set in, and I drank to cure it. And then my second son, who was at the time 7, was, almost killed in a ski accident. He fell 50 feet from a ski lift, and, it was terrible and terrifying and shook me to the core. And I knew that I wouldn't survive him dying. Like, I knew that. And he survived, but that knowledge really changed me. And I couldn't shake that feeling. And I, And so I drank more and I drank more and more to just feel, to stop feeling maybe, I guess. But also just to not feel that thing and that darkness that I had just come really close to. And, you know, he had all kinds of, you don't have that kind of injury and not have, you know, he had traumatic brain injury. And so he's an amazing musician. So, you know, fast forward to, he's a beautiful, wonderful 17-year-old today. But at the time, it was just a really terrifying time. So, and then I started the process of getting a divorce. I began to move back to Texas and everything was a process. And I drank and drinking felt like freedom at that time because life felt like a cage. It felt very closed in and scary and really uncertain. And I knew that I couldn't know what was coming next. And I really couldn't handle that. And my oldest son, who was 10 at the time, I know he started to notice that too. And noticed my drinking and began to, you know, try and stop me from drinking in some ways throughout that divorce as well. So my divorce, my drinking came up in the divorce and it ended with me doing a IOP with La Hacienda there was something about it that really like snapped me to attention. I was able to just immediately stop drinking and stop drinking without a lot of, you know, ramifications or anything that. And in that process, I met my now husband. I met a man that I would later marry, who was loving and sweet and wonderful. And so I made it through, you know, all of that, you know, relatively sober, I'll say. And I was absolutely drinking like an alcoholic. Absolutely. I was an alcoholic by all definitions. But I was able to just quit. And that would be a trend for a year or so that I would, you know, kind of scare myself. I would stop. And it was definitely every time I started drinking, it was progressing from, you know, the wines and the champagnes up to, you know, then hard liquor and then hiding hard liquor. And so then my, you know, my boyfriend had two children too. And so we moved in together and we combined our families. And we started planning to get married and his mom came to town. He's Turkish and she came to live with us. And there was something about the stress of having somebody else in my house that I don't know if it increased the feeling of that trap again or what it was, but it set me into drinking again. And this time I would never really, really be able to pull myself out. So we got married in Turkey, and it is hard to be an alcoholic in Turkey. I'm going to tell you that there's in a country where there's really not alcohol. You've got to fucking work if you want it, but it can be done. So it's okay. I managed to drink my way through being there. And I mean, truly, it's I'm laughing about that, but it's sad because I married the love of my life and I had this amazing family experience, but I was drinking so much of it. And then I would go through a tumultuous next 6 months, you know, trying to stop, starting again. And I mean, like, you know, trying to stop for like 2-3 days. And then the final 6 months of my drinking career, I, you know, I guess it would really be maybe just even the very last month. And it was just terrible off and on. And I was at that point drinking, you know, throughout the day. I had driven my kids having drank, you know, I don't remember ever driving them fully drunk, but that's probably saying a lot that I don't remember. I was a runner, you know, so drinking was an escape. So mostly I escaped into like literally a closet or the kitchen, or I would leave and go drink by myself at a restaurant. And so I got a DWI in April of 2013. Which was horrible and humiliating and all the things, but I, that didn't really stop me. I mean, I kept drinking. And then in May I knew that at this point I was 100% sure I was an alcoholic. I knew something had to be done. I was being able to convince a therapist and a psychiatrist that I was just crazy. And you know, maybe borderline personality disorder. I mean, I remember all these things being thrown around. But at some point I drank to a point that a girlfriend who was a psychiatrist came over and took me to Seton Shoal Creek. So I spent 3 days there. And you know, that really scared me. And I kind of, you know, snapped out of it slightly. And we were looking at all kinds of psychiatric places for me to go to. And the truth is, I don't 100% know the full story because I was blissfully a little unaware. Interestingly, I actually did call Austin Recovery on my own one time and speak to a therapist there. And I actually went even over to over there. And but I didn't end up going to Austin Recovery. My mom came down and they eventually hired interventionists. And I went on a couple day drinking rampage where I would stay at hotels as well. Like I would decide that I would need to stay at a hotel and then, finally come back. And so I was at, I don't even remember which hotel, but it was like I didn't go the low end route. I was staying at like the Four Seasons and the W and all of these really nice places, which was terrible and very expensive. But I eventually came home from one of those and my dad had flown in from Florida. My mom was in the living room and there were two people that I didn't know in the living room and I knew what was going on. And I was filled with so much shame. The only thing I can really remember from that morning, or as far as feelings go, was just outright shame. And I was tired. And so I went with no fight. I went to a treatment center south of Dallas I'm from south of Dallas. I went to a treatment center called Sante, which is west of Dallas, I guess, near Fort Worth. And I spent 72 days there. And it was hard. And the hardest was being away from my sons. And, you know, I'm uniquely close to my older sons because their dad is, was really battling depression of his own, I know now, for a lot of our marriage. And so it felt like I was a single mom for a long time. And then I was a single mom. And also I was really young when I had them. So I going to treatment, I had fought it for a long time because I was afraid my ex-husband would try and take them, which he did. He did try to take them. And then I was also afraid that they would never forgive me for leaving them. And I'm a crier and I'm not apologizing for it. I'm just telling you so that you know. So that was the hardest part. And I still remember them coming to visit me after the, 2 weeks or so that when they could. And somebody had said early on that, you get sober and you'll pass your sobriety over to them. Your recovery will, your kids will get that. And, that was the only thing that kept me going. So I got sober exclusively for my sons. I didn't believe in God. I couldn't buy into the 12 steps, for a long time because it kept talking about God. I really felt like that was the only problem with it. Like, I felt like it was just a flaw in the system that God kept coming up and that, you guys, of course, were just missing a whole swath of people that could probably really use help because you kept talking about God. And so I treatment, obviously it changed everything and it was wonderful and I'm so, so grateful for it, but it's not really the place that I gave up. It's not the place not gave up that I turned it over. It's definitely not that place. It's not the place that I started understanding that, what I was thinking was wrong and I needed to listen to somebody else because that was the only thing that was going to get me through. But it did give me time to not have any alcohol, obviously, and also not have my kids, in all honesty, and not be with my husband, who, by the way, we fought so much. I mean, obviously, like when I was drunk, I picked fights with him to bells and whistles, shiny object, distract him from the fact that I was a raging alcoholic. And, I picked a fight with him. And despite all that, he stayed with me. So I spent our first anniversary at a treatment center and, he is still with me today, which is maybe, speaks to his lack of judgment more than mine. So anyway, I got through treatment, and I'm eternally grateful for the space and for the time. And I came back and I did the things that people said. I can say now I didn't totally buy it. Like I know that I didn't have in my head that I was never really going to drink again. Like I knew I needed to play this part for a while, but that I didn't really believe that, you know, this was it, that I was, you know, never going to just join my girlfriends again or just honestly drink again in order to not feel the things that I knew I couldn't keep feeling. And I had so much, you know, shame still, and so much, I was so disappointed in myself. I was so disappointed in all these things that I hadn't done that I really believed that I should have done by this age. And I literally couldn't get out of that feeling of regret and remorse enough to actually do any of the shit. Like I can look back now and see that I spent so much time just feeling that emotion that I could have actually just started doing some of it, but that just didn't occur to me. So, I got back to Austin and I was reunited with my sons, but I had to be on I don't know what it's called. I can't remember now, but I had to take a breathalyzer anytime. Like I got a call and I had to take a breathalyzer, test. And so I fought with my ex-husband and I'd had to have lawyers involved and this, all of it. And despite all of that, about 3 months in, I know I had gotten to 3 months. So I know it was October 25th. That's what I know. I relapsed. I had to go to Dallas for a court date for my son's accident. And I came home and I had a cough and I took a cough syrup and it had codeine in it. And I can't, honestly, looking back, I don't remember knowing it had codeine. It feels like I might have known, but I don't have that memory. But I took the medicine. My Chinese food came and it didn't have my Diet Coke, and I went to go buy one. And instead of going to the gas station, I went to the liquor store. And so I drank. And so I drank for 24 hours. I wrecked my car. I almost died. I sat in a parking lot and cried and called, you know, one of my friends from treatment and called my mom. And I came home and fought with my husband. And the next morning, talked to my therapist, and she said, go to a meeting tonight and get a desire chip. And so I did, and it was horrifying, and it was terrible and embarrassing again. And I felt all that shame all over again. And after that meeting, a woman named Carol came up to me and said, "Well, I can't be your sponsor, but I'll meet you here tomorrow." And I went home from that meeting, and my husband told me that, you know, again, against all odds, that he loved me. And my sons came home because they had been with their dad. Somehow, by the grace of God, and if I didn't believe in God before, if I had paid attention to this at the time, I should have believed in God at that moment. I didn't get a call in any of those 24 hours to take my breathalyzer. So nobody anywhere knew that this had happened except for my now husband and my kid. And anyway, what I'm trying to get to is that I was greeted with love after that relapse, and I shouldn't have been. There was no reason that I should have been, but I was. And so, I know with 100% certainty that saved my life. And that was also, that was really the moment that I, that what felt like I gave up. That's when it felt like I was like, I understand now that my brain is not telling me the right things. So fine, fuck it. I'll do whatever you guys say. And so I met Carol the next day at a meeting at noon, and she introduced me to a sponsor. And I had been a yoga teacher for a long time, and I'd been in this yoga teacher training, and they had all seen me drunk. And someone in that training knew a friend who knew the group, the 1313 group. And so she took me to that group. And that's when I started to get sober. It's October 26th and 2013. And I haven't drank since. And it scared the drink out of me in some ways. I haven't wanted to drink since, in all honesty. I really haven't. I know I'm so lucky to have that. But the desire was truly removed. But the getting sober emotionally part, that was the real, that's been the hard part. I mean, not drinking for me, because it was so terrifying, felt easy. Trying to deal with life on life's terms was is still to this day feels fucking impossible. And I don't know how anybody ever does it without the steps and without a program. So I had a lot of therapy. I had a strong yoga practice. So that helped me with a meditation practice because I kind of knew what that was. And I got the advice from an early on, I think of it as teacher, but a woman in sobriety, that I should just fake praying until it made sense. Just do it as if, act as if. And, so I did, and I was an absolute fake. And for me, that was really hard because I think a lot of my life I had felt really false. Like I knew I had married a husband I didn't love. I wasn't living up to or my own standards and what I wanted to be or do. Instead, I was being this mom and this, you know, this thing that I didn't even want, and I didn't want to do any of those things. And so then here's this, while I'm trying to get very honest, here I am doing this thing that feels so fake. It was fake. It was. And, but I don't know, again, I can't point to the logic in it, but it worked. Eventually, and for a long time too, in meetings, I would never say the word God. I couldn't say it. And now that just feels so, so really normal, you know, and I'm again, not 100% sure when that change happened. It just happened gradually over time, but it took a long time. I mean, it took a year. It took at least a year for me to really feel like, I was being completely honest with the way that, you know, my program worked. I hope that makes sense, but it felt disingenuous to me to talk about a God or to even be talked to about God. But again, the acting as if that piece really, really worked. Early on after my relapse, about a month into it, I remember going to a meeting, and it was the meeting that I now think of as my home group, which is the Bridge to Shore. It's right by my house. It's the Bridge to Shore women's group. And women's meetings have actually meant a whole lot to me. I should talk about that as well. But, I was at the Bridge to Shore women's group, and I saw these two women there that were just like beacons of successful recovery to me. They were smart, and they had jobs, and they made their own money, and there was no man that took care of them. And they, you know, had kids, but that didn't define them. And I mean, they just had their shit together in this way that I could not even fathom. I couldn't even fathom. But it was that piece of like looking at somebody else and seeing somebody that, you know, I wanted what they had. And so a couple of years later, I actually now work with them. I work with them, and I call both of those women my very, very good friends, dear, even best friends. And I don't know, like, it's still to me mystifying how that exactly happened, because I can remember so vividly the feeling of sitting there still feeling shame and still feeling as though, you know, I hadn't done any of the things that I was supposed to do or needed to do. And so let's see, what does my notes talk about? So yeah, so I got sober. So and I got a little more emotionally sober, I think. I wouldn't say I'm completely emotionally sober today, but I certainly started to figure out how to manage more of my life on life's terms. And God started to show up, and you know, I now I don't shy away from or think it's strange at all to talk about God and what I really believe is God's place in my life is the, you know, and I can say God and I can say the universe, and the way I talk about it with my older son, who has a lot of the same doubt, and I would also say that I worry has some of the same problems that I have when he's 20, and we'll see. But you know, is that like, I don't feel the need to explain to anybody what I think of as God. And I don't honestly feel the need to define it even for myself. I just know that there's a presence. And what I know is that when I'm totally stuck and I don't know which way to turn, or I don't know what the next right step is, if I can just take, like, if I can just pause for a second and, you know, breathe for just a second and honestly pray, help me. That's it. Like, that's literally my prayer. Help me. Then something will come to me. And invariably, it's the thing that I need. And I mean, invariably. And so, so about 3 years into being sober, 4 years into being sober, I got pregnant and I had a third baby, at 41, which was the best decision and the worst decision I've ever made, all rolled up into one. And so, I mean, and then, and at the same time that I was pregnant, I actually started, I had just started looking for, to start working again. I had, you know, really just been being a mom to all four kids. Because my husband has two of his own. So we're a blended family of four. And, as I was pregnant, I got a job as a contractor working on the, Austin Recovery fundraising luncheon. And that led to, a job with University High School and being a fundraiser there. And while I had not been working, I'd actually been volunteering with a group called Community Yoga Austin, which was a social justice organization. And in the meantime, my now husband and I created a software platform that, helped small organizations like Community Yoga Austin and University High School raise money. So against all odds, today I am the mother of five kids. That's five. And I have, two jobs. I have a software company and I'm a fundraiser consultant for Austin Recovery Network, And I, my whole life is infused with recovery. Nothing like there is no piece of what I have or who I am today that I could possibly have if I hadn't gone through all of the parts that I went through. And what's truly happened that's incredibly amazing is all that shame and all that regret and all that feeling of I fucked it all up and I don't have the chance to do all the shit I was supposed to do is gone because in this really short amount of time, I got to do it. And I know for sure that I only got to do that because not only because I'm in recovery and because I don't drink, I have a lot more time to read and get shit done. But also because I have these incredible tools and somehow with it and also working with recovery organizations, I've been able to, that big, huge shame piece that I had around, you know, what I did to my kids and how I dragged them through all this and, you know, all of that, while it still comes up for me and you can hear it, it's when I cry, like I'll invariably cry talking about my boys, relative to my drinking. It's still there, but I have had the ability to really be honest about it and not have to hide because, and I really think because I work with, and am around people that have such strong recovery and it's such a piece and factor of their life that they don't even bother with the bullshit of hiding it, you know? And I understand that does not work for everybody. I have no judgment at all. Obviously I'm absolutely understanding of people maintaining their anonymity, but that hasn't been the case for me. I've never felt that, in the last, 4 years in my profession, my new professional life, I'm a brand new professional at 45. I have never felt like I needed to hide, that piece of me. And I'm grateful for that because that piece of me is the biggest part, is the reason that I am here and how I have all of the things that I have. I don't know, Chris, is that long enough? Sure. Okay. I really appreciate you guys listening to me. It was weird talking, seeing my own face first. So I hope that I was sure I was making some weird faces trying not to look at myself, but, I really appreciate you guys letting me share. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Leah. That was beautiful.
Thank you.
Leah, great job.